Welcome to Adequate Yearly Progress, Episode 5. My name is Erin Sterling, and I'm the librarian at Eckstein Middle School in Seattle, Washington. Every episode, I interview a different teacher and find out why they became a teacher, and what they like about it, and what they don't like about it. In this episode, I interview a friend, Mark Ballinger, who used to work with me at Eckstein Middle School and now works at the nearby Jane Addams Middle School as a language arts, social studies, and tech teacher. Mark is an incredibly smart person with a dry sense of humor that students love, even if they don't always understand. He also always gives me great book suggestions. As you will be able to tell from this interview, he is reflective, thought-provoking, and passionate about teaching. All right, let's go! Hi, Mark. I'm glad you're on my show. For everyone listening, this is Mark Ballinger. Mark is a language arts and social studies and tech teacher at Jane Addams Middle School in Seattle, Washington. So, Mark, tell me about yourself and why you became a teacher.
I am a second career teacher. So I was in IT for 19 years as a self-employed consultant, and then decided at one point when I knew I needed to change something, either really change what I did in IT or leave it, I decided to leave it. And I had been, straight out of college, I went to Japan for 2 years to work as an assistant teacher of English in the Japanese public school middle schools. So that, and I liked that a lot, so that to me was an option to go back to. So when I decided to leave IT, it coincided with my son entering middle school, and that the visits to middle school reminded me what that looked like, what that felt like, and I decided that that's what I wanted to do.
So you were always passionate about middle school?
It turned out that way, yeah. So I did, I worked in middle schools in Japan, and then, you know, by the time my children were heading towards or into middle school, I felt I knew that age. I knew that age of child and what they were like, and I knew that I liked that. So having made that commitment to myself, I've very much stuck with middle school, and that is what I prefer. When I spent 2 years as a substitute teacher at all grade levels, and very much middle school was the one level that I preferred.
Okay. So what do you find rewarding about being a teacher?
I found right off the bat that even just in graduate school before entering the classroom, that just being out and in a social environment was hugely rewarding. In IT, it's a very solitary endeavor. I worked with people all the time, but it was most often through electronic communication. The kind of work I did with other people was, to me, very repetitive of training how to do things, processes, and just not very social. When I was thrust into graduate school and then into the classroom, it became an instant, massive social environment because the classroom is this huge dynamic organism of interactions, and that is just so rewarding. And it's working with the adults and working with students that makes that such variety that makes it rewarding.
What was an early challenge for you in teaching? And I guess you kind of had this experience in Japan and then coming back to it. So it could be early challenges on both fronts, or it could be early challenges as a kind of second career.
Sure. In Japan, I was not any more than really just a person to speak English correctly, because teachers often didn't. In Japanese, in English language instruction at the time, it was very much a rote learning thing. So Japanese kids could read and write fairly fluently, but couldn't pronounce, couldn't speak. So I was not really a teacher. I didn't get to plan lessons. I didn't get to plan assessments. I didn't fully participate in the professional environment of teaching in Japan. So it was not really a professional job I had. When I became a teacher in the States, in my real current job, obviously there's just a huge amount of work you have to do on the side. And so the responsibilities of developing professionally, the responsibilities of meetings and planning has, and just it's time management is the hugest challenge as a teacher. In IT, where, especially because I was self-employed, I could set my own schedule. It was there was a lot of wiggle room, and there just isn't that as a teacher. In the summers, you're taking this much needed break, but right away you have to leap back into things. Mm-hmm. And it has never been the case where I can go the whole summer saying, all right, I'm ready to go in September. Uh-huh. Every single year I have to do a ton of work to get ready. So it, and then during the school year, it's crazy how much time you have to put into it. And that's by far the biggest challenge, is just the sheer amount that not what that we're required to do, but what we feel compelled to do, mm-hmm. just because we want to be successful in that community.
Right. Do you think there's anything in particular that's helped you, I guess, become a better manager of your time, or just like help address some of that challenge?
No.
No. Okay.
There are certain, you know, electronic tools, along with other teachers, we try out, you know, ways of file sharing and ways of communicating and ways of collaborating online, so that it's not, everything doesn't have to be done face to face, and everything doesn't have to be done on printed out pieces of paper that are hard to manage.
Right.
But, you know, right now we haven't found that one holy grail that does it all.
Did that surprise you about teaching, or was there anything else that surprised you about teaching?
No,
once you actually started.
I think most people are aware that the load of a teacher is very high, because we all read about how teachers take home piles of work and spend all weekend grading and planning lessons, and it's not a surprise. I surprise myself by taking on roles that I didn't anticipate, such as being a technology leader at Exide Middle School last year. And it wasn't a total surprise, but mm-hmm. I do have a lot of trouble saying no to things, so I guess, you know, that's part of it is mm-hmm. having to set boundaries. And as a new teacher, you tend to feel like you're allowed to set some boundaries, but you feel compelled to relax on others.
Right. Are there any lesson plans you can think of over your years of teaching? I think particularly your years now that went really well, that have made you feel like, like what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah. I mean, for example, ask kids to read independently. And one of the things that I thought worked really well, because the classic response to a book is the book report, and how dry and unauthentic that is, I like to, as much as possible, have students do things that are authentic, that actual people do in the real world. So in the real world, we read books, you and I read books, and we share our reviews, we share our suggestions, we share our responses to books.
Yeah.
And I want kids to do that. And so I think I've showed you the Unshelved book review website.
Yeah.
And how they, every Friday, do these book reviews that are very programmatic. They have certain questions they ask.
Uh-huh.
And then every Friday they choose one book to make what I call the book poster, which is just this sort of advertising sheet for a book. And when I ask students to do that kind of project with their reading, it's instant engagement, because it's creative.
Yeah.
And it's authentic to the way that you and I as adults share books. And so I can say, this is something that real people do, and they totally get that.
Uh-huh. And what about lesson plans that don't go as planned? And it doesn't have to be an example, but what do you do with that?
The things that are most frustrating are when you just flat out have content students have to get. And at the sixth grade level, we do, say, ancient world history. And when there's an element of knowledge in the ancient world, so it's not talking about skill-based, how to take notes, how to process artifacts, but just, you got to know this stuff. You got to know, for example, elements of Hinduism, because we think it's important and will lead to interesting connections later.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the reading of it is super dry and boring. And when you as a teacher find yourself holding the textbook in front of a crowd of yawning middle schoolers saying, we got to get through this, and fighting the urge to tell them, I realize this is boring, but it's necessary.
Right.
You know, I don't want to kill their enthusiasm for the scholarship, but at the same time, I don't right then have anything super interesting for them to do.
Right.
That's really demotivating.
Yeah, I think I was talking to someone once, and they were saying, the really mark of a good teacher is not when you're doing a really cool, exciting lesson plan, but like, what do you do with the stuff that's
straight out of the
dry,
textbook.
Or that's straight out of a textbook, or that's, I think I was talking to a math teacher, so it was like, when it's the math stuff that's not, you know, exciting making a poster about
right,
it.
Right, right.
Have you found any strategies that make that stuff interesting or
sure.
Or ways to just organize students so that it's kind of in chunks of time?
Well, it's the principle is engagement, and it's finding the students a way to be the ones who are doing the teaching and learning.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, at the most basic level, you jigsaw things out
uh-huh.
and have different groups of students taking on different tasks and presenting to each other. And then you can, you know, go deeper into, say, simulations where you're asking the students to put their heads in the mindset of the people who created this ancient culture
mm-hmm.
and then do kind of meeting of the minds of that.
Mm-hmm.
Or if possible, build debates out of things. So uh-huh. have students collect information about a topic that's controversial and have to discuss that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think grad school was helpful in getting you to think about kind of this curriculum plan and lesson, or is it
no.
more internal, or is it more from other people, or kind of
I think
mixed?
It's been much more from other people and experience and seeing what students are willing to do.
Okay.
Personally, I don't think grad school, we did it in a year. Right.
Yeah.
So there's just not enough time to really spend seeing how things fail.
Mm-hmm.
Like anybody, we learn best by things that just tank.
Right.
And we didn't have time in our teacher prep to really let things go poorly
mm-hmm.
and rebuild and redo.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
So kind of speaking to that, what advice do you have for people who are thinking of going into teaching?
I don't know that I have any advice except that I continually read things online and things in the paper of, well, I could always do teaching as kind of a fallback.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even specifically, well, I could always teach special ed as a fallback. And you just can't. You have to have that enthusiasm going in. You have to want to do it. Otherwise,
right.
you'll be bad at it.
Yeah.
And nobody goes into teaching for the money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we're getting that element, but it's not a fallback plan.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not, you know, a job creation plan. It
yeah.
it is a profession, and mm-hmm. you have to be enthusiastic about doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree completely. What do you like about the... I guess you mentioned a little bit what you like about middle school. Is there a particular reason that you chose to get an endorsement in language arts and social studies versus, I guess, like math and science?
Yeah, that
seems to be a little bit more your background. Although you're
yeah.
doing tech now, I know.
I know. It's humanities is my background. I majored in history
okay.
at college. To me, but I started doing tech stuff in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
in the early 80s. I think I got my first computer sometime around 1980.
Okay.
And that's always been, for me, something I liked, but
mm-hmm.
not something that I found challenging.
Right.
I don't mean to sound arrogant or anything like that, but tech stuff was always easy,
okay.
and I was able to get paid doing it. So,
even when you were young.
Yeah.
Or like, and going through college. And
yeah. yeah. So, you know, jobs I had were tech based. I worked in retail selling computers, and
mm-hmm.
I worked as, you know, working in data entry. And in college, I did temp service work of word processing and data entry.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was nothing thrilling. And, you know, it's one of those jobs and professions, at least for me, that you can at 5 o'clock call it done and shut down the computer and not have to do anything.
Right.
This was pre-internet, so there was no sort of compelling reason to keep the computer on after 5 o'clock. And so humanities was the thing that I find most interesting
uh-huh.
and challenging and difficult. I got terrible grades in social studies. And
really?
Yeah.
In high school?
Or middle school.
Middle school and high school?
High school I did okay.
Okay.
But... and college, I got astoundingly terrible grades in history.
What?
But that's because...
that is very surprising.
Because it's challenging for me, and the students find it hilarious. I sometimes haul out my 7th grade report card, which says bad things
wow.
about me in social studies.
That's weird. You're one of the, like, smartest people I
no,
know
but
around here.
In humanities. I mean, I read a lot, obviously.
Right.
And I am fascinated by history. Uh-huh. But the mechanics of academic work in history is something that's always been a challenge to me.
Okay.
But I like it. So that's
why. Which is why you want to do it.
Yeah. I want to do something challenging.
Yeah. That's great. Do you think that you're kind of in teaching for the long run now?
Yes.
Okay.
Our family situation is such that I don't have to work a high-paying job to mm-hmm. make ends meet. So I don't anticipate being at the beginning teacher salary for the rest of my life. But at the same time, I don't have to go off and take a higher-paying job just because.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
My children are old enough that they don't need any managing at all.
Uh-huh.
And so... and we're not going to have any more children, so there's no leave taking that I'll have to do.
Right.
So I feel like I can be a part of a teaching community and stick with it until I feel like retiring. Yeah. And because, frankly, as a humanities teacher, I think there's opportunities to go be a coach in reading or a coach in humanities or social studies. So if I get old enough that the classroom is not an environment I can manage, then I think... you know, that's like an avenue I can go to. And that would still be interesting to me.
Yeah. Are there any things that frustrate you about teaching in particular?
I think the number one thing that frustrates me about teaching in general is that we as the teaching professional community don't do a good job selling what we're doing to the public.
Mm-hmm.
We have very little public support. I mean, a lot of people, right. You hear, oh, you teachers have a thankless job and blah, blah, blah. And we appreciate you. And yet, just the sheer hatred that we see in the media towards teachers and in politics towards teachers, a lot of people say, oh, yes, of course we support our teachers. And yet funding is, as you know, in Washington State, inadequate. Unconstitutionally inadequate. And I don't think that's the public's fault necessarily, but because I do think we as teachers have a hard time selling what we do.
Yeah.
We have this mass of jargon that we find important, for example, around, let's say, the Common Core State Standards, that we have, you know, worked with and processed and know what we're talking about when we talk about it, but the public doesn't.
Right.
So you have things like this math adoption controversy in the Seattle Public Schools, where I think there's two conversations going on. One, the teacher academic nuts and bolts conversation, and the public conversation, which they just don't merge at all.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's kind of the responsibility of us as teachers to kind of make the public more, or is that just like, can that change?
No, I think we do what we can. I think the teachers union could do a better job at that. Politicians could do a more authentic job of paying attention to the reality of what is happening in the schools. The physical plant of schools is pretty bad. I mean, we're not in Seattle Public Schools, not as bad as some districts that in broken down buildings, but you know, some of our buildings are pretty old and rough looking. Then in the media, and that includes, you know, the new media, I think there's a cynicism that I guess everybody faces, but teachers in particular are targets of that cynicism in a way that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah. I think what's been surprising to me is even people who I know and really care about teachers and love it will still say things like, oh, well, if only the, I don't know, barrier for entry into grad school is higher so that we've got a smarter population. And which surprises me mostly because most of the teachers I work with that are sticking with their jobs are passionate about what they do because they wouldn't be otherwise. And so I don't know.
And super hardworking. I mean,
And hardworking and I don't know. So I find it's this kind of weird elitist thing when we do the thing of comparing to, I think when it gets compared to like South Korea, for example, or
Finland,
which are
yeah.
the two
exemplars
that come up and it's like, well, they're, you know, they're the highest entry, and I think there's maybe some validity, but it right. just comes across as.
But I think it's there's an element weird. Of public misunderstanding. For example, to take a really weird analogy, people assume that the United States gives more in foreign aid than we actually do,
uh-huh.
right?
Right.
And people assume that the United States is doing things with the foreign aid that they would disagree with. But if you actually look at it, oh no, it's all fine, and it's not actually that expensive. The
yeah.
same is
yeah.
true with teaching. People assume that there are more inadequate lazy teachers than there really are.
Right.
And people assume that it's harder to get rid of those inadequate teachers than it really is.
Uh-huh.
That's the tenure discussion. Teachers don't really have tenure in the sense of a protected job that's protected from, in the university sense, protected from political wins.
Yeah.
What we have is a policy of making sure that if somebody is being pushed out of the profession, that there's steps to follow.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's it.
Yeah.
And yet it's made to sound like, you know, once teachers get tenure, we can put our feet up on the desk and do crossword puzzles.
Right.
And that's totally not, that's totally
no,
not
that's
it.
Not true. And kind of switching gears as I'm wrapping up, what are you excited about this year?
Well, I'm moving to a new school. Mm-hmm. Jane Addams Middle School is opening as the first new school to open in Seattle schools in something like 40 years. Over the next 3 years will ramp up to about 1,000 students and is going through a pretty nice remodeling project. So I think at the end of these 3 years, we will have a good program.
Mm-hmm.
The principal has been allowed to hire her staff. There's been no sort of placing of staff. There's
right.
no, you know, people who just sort of fell into their positions. It's been a really rigorous search
yeah.
for the staff, and what has happened is we have a really, really young new staff, which has its challenges,
yeah.
But also has its opportunities. And the cynicism element to me comes from reading what parents post on their online blogs about this program.
Okay.
And I'm hoping that they'll be able to sort of allow us to have a little messiness, because it's going to be messy at the beginning.
Do you mean, are they posting like, oh, this is going to be a great new beginning?
No.
Or is it?
They haven't really. They're
frustrated because their kids have been moved.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Actually, I think kids are more frustrated than parents at the
okay,
move.
Okay.
I don't know.
For those who don't know the situation, Mark used to teach at my school, which is Eckstein, and then there was basically Eckstein was getting way too big, and there are a lot of kids coming up, and so they opened up a new middle school, and I don't even know probably the like whole history of it. So there were a lot of teachers that got displaced from Eckstein, and then interviewed and ended up now at Jane Addams. But it's been a little bit messy, I think, just because...
Well, it's been fairly traumatic. I mean,
yeah.
the Eckstein staff was sort of traumatized.
And that was traumatic, yes.
By the
yes.
20 people who got displaced.
Oh, I know. I'm very excited for you. I'm a little sad for us, but I think in the long run, it'll actually be good for us.
And not only that, I think because we have this crossover of former staff, that there's no way that we are two distinct programs that will never talk to each other.
Right, right.
I was just talking about technology to Aurora Metter,
uh-huh.
and I am still talking to humanities teachers, and Kathy yeah. Sherman came to visit us. So we, you know, we
yeah,
are
we
not,
have a connection.
We have a connection.
And last but not least, this is kind of a thinking. Are there any students in the years you've been teaching that particularly stand out in your mind to you, either as something you did or something that just they did independently, or it could be anything, or a strange story, just a student that stands out in your mind, or a class. It could be a class that stands out in your mind.
Sure. I mean, I've had students that stand out at sort of, I would say, both ends of the academic and emotional well-being range. And the ones that really stand out are the problem kids, who
right.
tend to also have the sides that, you know, you can bring out and see hope in them.
Yeah.
I don't know. We laugh a lot in my classroom, and I don't have particular instances in my mind, but just sort of the mood and memory of a class is the times that we were just shrieking with laughter over something that's so much an inside joke, it doesn't make any sense outside of the context. And like my students have written down funny things that have been said in the classroom and posted them on the walls, and they're mystifying to anybody who comes and reads those out of context.
But you must have set that up, that they could write them down and post
them. No, they just do it. They ask me, hey, can we write this down and put it on the wall? And I say, yeah, no problem. So
that's cool.
Just the humor level is very high, and middle schoolers are hilarious.
So fun.
Very different. They're terrified at being unique and yet are willing to do things that make them unique.
Yeah.
So there's an edge that they walk, and sometimes it can be fun to be with.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on my show, and see everyone else in a couple weeks.
Thank you.
That's the end of my show. Thanks for listening. You can find future episodes on adequateyearlyprogress.com, iTunes, and hopefully soon the Microsoft Podcast app. Thanks to the band Inspira's song Follow the Waves for the upbeat music you are dancing to right now. Thanks to freesound.org for the Creative Commons license for user SBYANDIJI's alarm bell sound, user Totia's yeah sound, and user Mental Sanity Off for the background chatter sound. Thanks to all of you for listening, and talk to you next on November 16th.